This is part two of British visual art and popular culture since 1945. And I'm looking at some examples of well-known artists in Britain since 1945. Not to say that they're particularly representative, but more to show you that they're particularly varied. So we already looked at Henry Moore and Barbara Hepworth, who might in some ways be considered high art because, you know, they had to study and they needed, you know, a lot of money to make big sculptures like that. And on the other hand, they are very popular indeed. Yeah. At the same time, they're not popular art in the sense that they don't express experience which is specific to the rank and file of society. Slightly different than Ellis Lowry, this might be considered to be closer to popular culture, first of all because he was not a professional. All his life he worked in a collecting rents. When he was a young man, he went to collecting rent in the old way. Knock on the door. Hello, it's Friday. You need to give me the rent now. Yeah. And of course, when you knock at in the north of England, in Manchester, when you knock on the door, people are hiding under the table, literally. It was very, very, very poetic, but very, very painful experience too. So, Ellis Lowry, so born in 1887, yeah, so when it came to the First World War, he was already that old. Yeah, okay, 1887 to 1986. He lived in Salford. Salford is a part of Manchester, really. And this is the what it looked like at the time. And it hasn't changed a lot. You can see the rows of houses, which were an improvement on what people lived in before, but nevertheless very basic terraced housing, where this is a working class culture where everybody knows each other. You live with your parents, and then you get married, and you buy a house, or you rent a house across the road, because you don't want to go, and you and your sister is there, and very, very close communities, with all the advantages and disadvantages of that kind of close community. But what was particular about Lowry is that he liked to paint, and he liked to paint industrial landscapes. He liked to paint towns and ordinary people. And this is an absolutely typical one. Again, my father had a Lowry in, my father is a working class man, and my father had a Lowry reproduction. It obviously spoke to him. This was particular. This is in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s. It's particular because all the artists were working very hard at painting the landscape and the sea and the sky and abstract. And very, very few people were painting the towns and ordinary people. And so here you have them. And if you look at the people, you notice that there is not a concentration on the individual. In fact, they're fairly anonymous. They're not tremendously happy. This is a football match. Yeah, they're going to the football match. Yeah, so it's leisure. Yeah, it's leisure time. It's very popular. There's lots of the sort of impression of enormous numbers of people, all rather thin and walking like, you know, not very happy. Yeah, it rains all the time in Manchester as well. It hasn't been said. Not a very positive, optimistic view, but not really a complaining view. That's my interpretation. I think it's a kind of accepting the hardness of life. That's how I see it. But everybody can see it in their own way, of course. Look at the sun. Yes, look at the sun. Now, here's another one. Again, amusement is the fairgrounds. The fairground, tremendously important in the even up to 1970, when the fairground came to town. You know, it was this is like before Facebook. You know, so we had to amuse ourselves somehow. And so there they are in the fairground again. You know, this is the fairground. It's the time of fun. But who is really having fun? You can't really see. They didn't look like they're really having fun. They're just doing the having fun because it's time to do the having fun. Yeah, and there's always the dogs. And the older people and the younger people, Smith and Brown's amusements, yeah, there they are, all, and again, always a little bit like this, you know, always a little bit like this. And it spoke to people, so it's not an art of protest, but it's an art of social description, and there is something about painting ordinary people. If you paint a painting, you see, you go into the Louvre and you see oh look, a king and an aristocrat and a king and an aristocrat. So if you paint ordinary people, then you're saying ordinary people are important. That's a very important section of it. Yeah, just even painting them at all means that they're important. There they are again. That's a rather unusual one because you see that they have faces. But they don't always have faces. And there you can see with the faces that they're not, you know, they're not having a wonderful time, really, are they? It's like the University of Rouen, yeah, approximately. No, not really. Again, there they are playing around again. What do you think? Do you like it? Not so much. Yeah. Not so much. Anybody have an opinion on it? Is it expressive? You're unsure. It's just very geometrical, isn't it? It doesn't show a high level of skill. That's true. It is very geometrical. It's very He's not trying to. He's not interested in impressionism. And so on. Notice they all have a hat. That's a better known one. Very geometrical. And look at all the smoke and the domination of life by the factory. Yeah, there is life, and it's they're on the way to the factory, I think. Yeah, and the factory is dominating their entire lives. Yeah, so it's got some sort of message in it. L.S. Lowry. I had more things to say about this gentleman. I've lost him now. I was too busy on my diary. So he was born in Stretford, in fact, and most of his drawings and paintings depict nearby Salford and surrounding areas. Distinctive style of painting, best known for the urban landscapes peopled with human figures. There's also something else about this painter which is absolutely incredible, and that is that when he died, somebody wrote a pop song about him, and it was number one. Which is really, I mean, how many pop songs do you know about artists? I know one other one. There's one about Van Gogh, Vincent, by, I'm not going to sing it for you, but Don McLean wrote a song about Van Gogh. This song about L.S. Lowry, I'll put it on the blog, it's called He Painted Matchstalk Men and Matchstalk Cats and Dogs. Il a peint des gens d'allumettes, donc en forme d'allumettes. So he was popular enough to get a pop song to number one, which is quite something. Very, very surprising thing to it. I think there was also something about, again, the main thing was not so much what people were saying, it's just that people liked the idea that ordinary people were in paintings, because paintings were always full of bishops and kings and people we don't know. Yeah. So that really impressed people. And here you have the memorial statue to L.S. Lowry. Very interesting, very modern one. You can see you can sit on the bench next to him. You see, it's very lovely little statue there. Okay, so as I said, he was not a. He was also an official artist at the coronation of Elizabeth II. And he worked until he was 65 in a property company. And he also has a gallery now in Manchester. There's a gallery just of L.S. Lowry. So, you know, that's quite a success, you know, if you have a gallery with just your name on it. That's pretty cool. Slightly different style, Francis Bacon. Does anybody know Francis Bacon? Yeah? Okay. Slightly different style, yes? Yeah. Can you tell me something about his paintings? That's right. Yeah, that's right. He certainly did, and certainly not the same as L.S. Lowry. Not at all. Yes. Okay. So let's have a look at this gentleman, Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon was born in Ireland to English parents. And he's known for very emotional pictures of human beings. Normally, they are painted against a blank background. There's nothing behind them. They're not in their bedroom or in the park or anywhere. They're nowhere. They're just somewhere abstract. And you can see that they you often have a very clear impression that they have suffered. You know, there's a lot of suffering involved. Yeah, you can see this person is not having a wonderful time. Yes, it's they passed the aggregation. Yeah, or they didn't pass the aggregation, they failed the aggregation. He began painting in his early 20s, but he was not rich. He had to earn his living as an interior decorator and a designer of furniture. And he finally became famous later on, and especially in the 1960s and the 1970s, although his first famous piece was in 1944. Francis Bacon was a homosexual, and he was a homosexual in Britain in the 1940s and 1950s, and especially the 1950s was the hardest time in British history to be homosexual in London. It was dangerous. You couldn't keep a phone number because it was illegal to be a homosexual, and you could be put in prison. So you couldn't keep phone numbers of any of your friends, because if the police found you, then they would go and find your friends. Yeah, and the suicide rate was very high, because it was just the pressure was too great. Before the legalization of homosexual activity in private in 1967-68. So I think some of the suffering is also about this experience of not being able to exist there. This is a particular example. This is in fact a reference. Here is the original by Velázquez, a Spanish painter, of a pope, some pope or other. I can't remember which pope. And this is Bacon's version. Yes, you can see that it's the same, but of course it's not the same. He is in a cage and suffering. So what exactly he is saying beyond exploring suffering is difficult to say, but certainly a very important worker. There he is in front of one of his triptychs. He did a series of triptychs. Now the triptych is a religious tradition. It's a tradition in churches. You have a triptych for the reason was it was for the altar in the church. Not this one, but the religious ones were for the altar in the church. And at Easter you could close it and there was a different picture on the other side. Yeah, that's the triptych. And it's a traditional piece, but he does something which is a little bit different. Here's a portrait then. Again, every time it is about being destroyed, torn, and so on. It became more extreme. It became more extreme. Bodily harm and so on. This became extremely popular. One of his works was sold in 2008 for €55 million. €55 million for one of his works. That's why I didn't buy it. Okay. Again, triptych. I think one of the ideas here is that you need to look at them for a long time. Yeah, you need to see them again and again. One of the difficulties with if art is too simple, when you've seen it three times, you don't see it anymore because it's too simple. That's that one. I think that one is very powerful. I mean, I'm not a great fan of Francis Bacon, really, but I think that there's something very powerful there. It's communicating something, you know, and it's not very nice. It's not very nice, you know. Yeah, you know, I mean, if your boyfriend or your girlfriend paints something like that for your birthday, this is not good. You know, not a good sign. But you know, it's. I think there's definitely some content there. There's something to be said for it. So of course we are a long way from painting beauty. Beauty is not the intention. So in fact, if somebody says, "Oh, well, it's not beautiful," that's really just a stupid comment because it's not the intention. But the intention is to communicate. So if somebody feels it's not communicating with me, okay, that's life, yeah. But that's the intention here, and you can see that there's something particular about it. Okay, let's move on to another gentleman born in 1922. British painter, chiefly known for portrait and figure painters, extremely, extremely prestigious. In fact, 3 years ago in Paris, there was an exhibition of Lucien Freud in the Pompidou Center. Again, if you have an exhibition in Paris, you know, you're kind of winning on the art stake. Born in 1922, best known for thickly impasted portrait and figure paintings. And a certain, they say that his paintings are very psychological, and that's kind of logical in a way, because he is the grandson of Sigmund Freud. So, you know, c'est, il vaut mieux ne pas être psychologue dans ce cas-là, non? Impossible à suivre. So let's have a look at a little bit of Lucien Freud. That's the sort of, portrait he does. So, obviously, here we have something much more, considerably more traditional than Francis Bacon. Lucien Freud's brother was Clement Freud, who was a politician. He started close to surrealism, but then moved forward, and he very much liked to paint portraits of a person with their dog. There's a lot of animals in his portrait and his things, and he had a passion for horses. I have a little quotation from Freud here, but I'm not sure I've understood it, but I'll read it to you. Freud said, "I paint people not because of what they are like, and not exactly in spite of what they are like, but I paint them how they happen to be." Okay, yeah, so here you go, here he has. Very often there is, you know, obviously there are not a lot of clothes involved in these stories, yeah. Some clothes, but not a lot of clothes, and certainly a certain number of animals. Oh, look, she's got clothes on. Okay. And again, the position is important, yeah? The position is important. It's not sit and smile and I will paint you. The position is important here. Again, man with dog. Woman without dog. And again, he's choosing very ordinary people. He's not choosing, you know, the most beautiful man, the most beautiful woman. That's not the intention at all. It's some much more everyday approach. And of course, perhaps despite himself, this is his most famous portrait, which is of course Lizzie. Yeah. Well, she's called Elizabeth II, but she asked me to call her Lizzie. Okay. What do you think? Do you think she was pleased? You're not so sure. Okay. What adjectives would you apply to how she's painted here? What does she look? What does her personality look like?
Yeah. She looks stern.
Stern. Yes, she definitely looks stern, doesn't she? Yeah, very, very stern. Even any more? Oh dear, certainly, perhaps determined. Yeah. Yeah.
But she looks sad.
Ah, sad. Ah. The eyes are not sad. Oh, they are. Okay. They are. Now. We need to think about the most important question is of course not whether the Queen liked it, but this is a complicated question. She sat for it. She asked Lucien Freud to paint a portrait of her. Now, she's very rich, but she's not stupid. She knew he was not going to paint a traditional portrait of a beautiful queen. She's not stupid. So we don't know if she liked it or not. We don't know. She didn't comment. But. It wouldn't surprise me if she liked it. She looks determined. She looks like she's going to live forever. She looks pretty solid there. Certainly, I think it's a very interesting portrait because, first of all, today, portraits of kings and queens while they are still alive are almost universally the traditional flattering portrait of a noble, beautiful, boring painting. So there's something very interesting about it. It was, of course, attacked by the conservative newspapers. In fact, the Sun said she looks like one of the Queen's corgis who's had a stroke. Yeah. On dirait un des petits chiens qui a fait un AVC. Okay. But I suspect that she might have liked it because, like I say, she did ask him, and she's not that stupid, you know, if you ask Lucian Freud to paint your picture. And there is something prestigious in that. You have to remember that the Queen has been working very, very hard to look modern. Because the Queen has a big political problem. For a long time, there were two hereditary institutions in Britain, the Queen and the House of Lords. The House of Lords, from 1999, is now not hereditary. So the hereditary principle is under pressure. Everybody kind of thinks underneath, what a stupid way of choosing a head of state. You're the son of somebody. What is this? Yeah. So there's something very, very difficult about it because it's based on the idea that I should be king because my blood is superior. It's not a very modern idea, is it? And so she's under pressure, so she's working very, very hard to be modern. Did you remember what happened at the Olympic Games in the opening ceremony? Where she meets James Bond and then she appears to parachute into the ceremony. This is public relations. This is acid like come doffer. Our queen is modern, she has a good sense of humour, etc. And she agreed it was not the real queen in the parachute, but it was the real queen with James Bond. It was not the real James Bond, it's an actor. Never mind, it gets complicated. Okay, yeah. So she's working very hard to be modern, and perhaps having your portrait painted by Lucian Freud is about being modern. Born 1963. Petite Jeanne. Okay, she was born after me. That's pretty young, yeah. The 1960s, those were the days. It was terrible. We had no Facebook. We had no pizza. It was worse, you know. Yeah. People don't understand. You know, we had no pizza. Yeah, it was pretty bad. Yeah, yeah. I'm not a traditionalist. So Tracy Emin, born in 1963. So she's of this generation. In the 1970s, when she was older, 1978 and so on, many artists will go directly to art school, faire les beaux-arts. Yeah, so much more professional way forward. Tracy Emin, a very conservative lady, very modern but very conservative, politically conservative, which is not always the case. We often expect artists like Henry Moore or Francis Bacon to be a little bit radical, a little bit. Not Tracy Emin, of course. She has been fairly controversial. It's one of her early pieces called Friendship. So this is relatively traditional. It's square, it's got painting on it and so on. But she moves very quickly into things which are much more original. This is a tent, the title is Everyone I Have Ever Slept With. And inside there are a collection of names of everybody she has slept with, including boyfriends, but also the friends who came to sleep at her house when she was little, etc., etc. All whole things. So this is the everybody I have ever slept with. C'est sympa pour les ex, hein? Be careful if you choose as a boyfriend or girlfriend an artist. Always be careful, yeah. You never know what might happen 20 years later. Yeah. So everyone I ever slept with. So what Tracy Emin specialises in is putting in public things which are very private. That's one of the things which is very important. But we'll see more of that in a moment. Of course, she's tremendously controversial. This is another piece. I like this. Can you see what the form is? Yeah, can you see what the form is? It's... embroidery, it's sewing, c'est la couture, hein? C'est la cross-stitch, pointe de croix, et des choses comme ça, embroidery. Now, that's important because normally if you take different cloths and you make words with it, it's a very traditional art. You imagine people will write, home sweet home, or I love my grandma. Yeah, it's something which has a certain tradition. So what she does is she takes a very traditional means of expression, but says something which is not traditional. I do not expect to be a mother, but I do expect to die alone. It's very punk, really. It doesn't have to be like this. She went out like a 40-watt bulb, etc. I want it back, that girl of 17. Yeah. So these words can be interpreted in different ways, but I think the most important thing is this contrast between embroidery, which is a very feminine, traditional sort of thing that your grandmother might do to pass the time in the winter, and the messages. Yeah, so this is all in separate pieces of cloth. Yeah, sewn together. And she will do more of this mixing up of the medium and the message. This piece was the probably the most controversial. This is 1999, and she was shortlisted for the Turner Prize. Now, the Turner Prize is the most prestigious contemporary art prize in Britain. And she didn't, I think she didn't win it, but she was second or something. She was shortlisted. And it's called My Bed. And it appears to be her bed, including a lot of things which somebody who was not very tidy might have next to their bed. And let's say that some of the items are very personal indeed. Okay? I'm not going to give you the details. My mother wouldn't like me to talk about it. But let's say that there have been a number of activities in this bed which have left witnesses at the side, yes. Obviously, this was... obviously, this was very controversial, but it went into the logic of showing the very personal in public. Most people who know the name Tracy Amin only know this one work, which is a pity because she's done a lot of different things. Here again, you have a piece which contrasts the form and the message. This is, of course, neon. What are the words you expect to see in this form? Advertising. Coca-Cola. Pizza. Yeah, it's an advertising form. When we see this writing, it's normally advertising, you know, that's what it is. And so it's very important to contrast it with only God knows I'm good, yes, that the philosophical self-centered statement contrasts with the neon form, which, you know, it's going to flash Las Vegas, here is your casino, etc. So there's contrast going on. This again is certainly to be classed as conceptual art, because the important thing is the idea. Yeah. The idea of contrasting these two things. She has some more along the same lines. Yeah. You should have loved me. I like this stuff. And finally, for Tracy Emin, this is one that she did as well. She, in 2007, she became a member of the Royal Academy of Arts, which is, you know, it's a tremendous, tremendous honour. And in fact, I think it's really probably in the 1980s, or another 1990s, Tracy Amin and a few more British artists were very popular in the international contemporary art scene. And in fact, they talked about the young British artists, the YBA. And so for a moment, for a period of 10 years or so, Britain was an important place to be, which is difficult because usually, you know, it's New York or it's usually America which dominates in the contemporary art scene. So that's the end of Tracy Amin. Now, to go back to the question of high art or popular arts, again, this is a rather difficult. I don't think it's not so popular, really. It's a little bit too controversial to be popular. And it is very popular among people who love contemporary art. But as you know, people who love contemporary art is quite a small section, yeah? How many people here love contemporary arts, yeah? Apart from me, yeah. Yeah, 4 or 5, okay. They're all at the back. That's a sign that has meaning. That's a geolocation on it, yeah. Yeah, contemporary art, or certainly some... this is interesting because modern art, like Picasso. Today is really a lot of people like it, but contemporary art has been remained a little bit more for the moment has remained somewhat more. Okay, so let's stick with the young British artists, and we have Damien Hirst, born in 1965, the same year as my younger brother, who is not an artist. And he is one of the most prominent members of the group known as the Young British Artists, who dominated the art scene during the 1990s. He is internationally renowned and is reportedly Britain's richest living artist, with his wealth valued at £215 million. And he likes to... He was born in Bristol and he grew up in Leeds. His father was a motor mechanic. So he didn't come from a rich family, and his mother was an Irish Catholic. He was rather lucky because in 1991, Charles Saatchi, you know, the man from Saatchi and Saatchi, one of the richest men in the world, said, "I will buy anything you make." So he was okay from then on. Some of his work has been very controversial. For example, he produced a piece, and the title was "Too Fucking and Too Watching," and it was a cow and a bull rotting. Yeah, une vache et un taureau en train de en pleine décomposition. In New York, this was banned because they were frightened of vomiting among the visitors. So that Damien Hirst. Some of his work is not quite so difficult. Here is Damien Hirst in his studio. This is a very easy piece. A very easy piece by Damien Hirst. You can see on the left Mickey Mouse, on the right Ronald McDonald. Who's that in the middle? Yeah. Absolutely, it's a girl from the Vietnam War. What has happened to her?
Her back was burned by
the bombs. Yeah, she's burning from the bombs, from the chemical warfare bombs. Yeah, it's one of the. There are three famous pictures from the Vietnam War, and that's one of the most famous pictures. Yes, so, yeah. So, what do you think the painting is saying here? Yeah. Well, this is a criticism of American imperialism, really. Yeah, Mickey Mouse and Ronald McDonald are bringing us, yeah, the burning of children in Vietnam. So it's not very complicated. So it's obviously an attack on United States domination. So something fairly political, really. But most of his other work is not. Here you have another of his pieces. This one is quite like this one. It's called "For the Love of God," and it's a real skull, a real human skull, covered in platinum and studded with real diamonds. So the entire thing actually costs millions of pounds. Even when it's not art, it costs millions of pounds. So again, this is conceptual art. Not really very difficult, I don't think. Yeah, the skull represented death, and the platinum and the diamonds about money. And so obviously there's a reflection of, you know, you can be millions of millions, you will still die even if you have millions and millions and millions of pounds. So something, you're fairly straightforward here. Then this is the "For the Love of God." It's a human skull recreated in platinum and adorned with 8,601 diamonds. Approximately £15 million worth of diamonds. And when he sold it, he asked for £50 million for it. But nobody bought it. And so finally it was bought by a group, including himself. And it's like the, you know, it's like, you know, if you paid £1 million, then you can have it for 1 month every year or something. Now you do get private collectors who will do this, like, firstly because there are some people who are so rich they don't know what to do with their money, you know. But also there's a certain prestige in it. If you are, you know, president of Crédit Lyonnais, And you can have a very world-famous artist produce something very expensive for your central office. That's the kind of dynamic which happens in here. So Damien Hirst. Some of his stuff is not quite so so pretty. This is a dead shark preserved in liquid, and the title is The Physical Impossibility of Death in the Mind of Someone Living. Again, this was, of course, very controversial. Yeah. Very controversial, because it was bought by an art gallery in London, and, of course, many of the newspapers were unhappy about that. Let's have a look then at Andy Goldsworthy, born in 1956. He's a British sculptor, photographer, and environmentalist, and he likes to produce sculpture, but also land art. Now, land art, donc littéralement l'art de la terre, is something, a very specific type of contemporary art, really, over the last 50 years. I don't think it's older than that. And it's about producing from the landscape or in the landscape pieces of art. So, you know, for example, you might use rocks to make a big drawing in a field, yeah? That would be land art, yeah, to use the land to make your art. One of his most famous pieces is this one, which is, again, it's conceptual art, although it's also physical sculpture, and it's also historical exploration to some sort. This is called Arch. And as you can see, it's an arch. Yeah. But what is particular about it is, in fact, every day he takes it down and puts it up again somewhere else. So every day, well, not forever, but for a few months, every day he take it down and put it up somewhere else. The arch, in fact, he followed a very, very old traditional road which the shepherds used to use to bring their sheep down from Scotland into England. And so he followed this old, of course, which is not used anymore. So he followed this traditional old folk road, and he built every day in a different place. So it's a commemoration of a historical tradition, people's tradition. Also, an arch has always been linked to a number of concepts. The arch is, you know, the rainbow, which was God's promise in the Bible. The arch, you know, the Arc de Triomphe, the arch, the triumphal arch. When you go through it, you're going somewhere. You're going to somewhere better. So a lot of symbolism in the art, and then also this idea of taking it down. And it's very interesting as well, because he would turn up in a village and with just him and his van. And he would find people and say, will you help me make this arch, please? I said, well, why are you making art? And he would explain the artistic project to all these people in villages in the middle of nowhere. Yeah? So it has a certain sort of style to it. That's Andy Goldsworthy, an archer. His father was a mathematics professor. He was born in Cheshire, but he grew up in the suburbs of Leeds. He was not from a rich family. From the age of 13, he worked on farms as a labourer. And he studied fine art at Bradford College of Art in the 1970s and Preston Polytechnic. These are not very prestigious colleges at all. He's generally considered to be the founder of the work with rock in the most recent period. And he was honoured but with a medal from the Queen in 2000, the Order of the British Empire. There it is again, and there it is again, and there it is again. Arch. This is another of his works. So very simple things, often with rock. And there's another one. So, we're still going here. We're on to Mark Wallinger, who was also born in 1959. British artist, best known for two works. First of all, Ecce Homo, and secondly, State Britain. Now, State Britain, it's a political piece of work. And I have to explain the story a little bit. During the 1990s, the late 90s, yeah, the mostly, the, sorry, the years, I can't remember when it started. I think it's during the years, more the decade of the year 2000. There was, of course, the war in Iraq. And the war in Iraq was very unpopular in Britain. Britain joined the war in Iraq, France did not join. And the war in Iraq was, I think a million people died in Iraq. And it was actually very unpopular in Britain. There was a big movement against it. And as part of the movement against it, this Christian man, Brian Hoare, created, just opposite the Houses of Parliament, this peace camp where he lived. He lived there, and he has all this sometimes religious slogans and sometimes political slogans, UK troops out of Iraq, and photographs of the children who were injured and burned by the British bombs in Iraq. So a very political protest. And the government were not happy. This is opposite the Houses of Parliament. Millions of tourists saw it every year. And so the government were not happy. But strangely enough, because of the laws in Britain, he had lived for more than a month. In any case, they couldn't expel him. They had no law to expel him for complicated reasons. And so he stayed there, but they really were not very happy. And so they passed a new law. And they said, any demonstration less than 1 mile from the Houses of Parliament is illegal. So they passed a new law. So they actually passed a new law just because of one man, which is quite impressive. And so that they managed to get rid of him. And Mark Wallinger is an artist, and he noticed that the Tate Modern is exactly 1 mile from the Houses of Parliament. And so he produced this. This is a reproduction. It's not the original, but it's an exact reproduction. And half of it is more than a mile from the Houses of Parliament, and half of it is less than a mile from the Houses of Parliament. And the title is, and it's called State Britain. So it's a joke, Tate Britain, State Britain. And so now, of course, so in theory, the police could come and destroy half of it. Now, as you imagine, this would be politically a very bad idea for any government to send the police into an art gallery to destroy half of a work of art. So a very interesting political protest, and also a tremendous amount of skill, because everything is exactly reproduced, including the teddy bears and so on. Yeah. So again, conceptual art, but also very political art. This is Mark Wallinger. So also obviously defending the right to protest against the war. So it's protesting against the war, it's defending the right to protest against the war, and it's a joke, because half of it is more than a mile away and half of it is less than a mile away. Mark Wallinger. This is part of the reproduction. Every element was absolutely carefully reproduced. And this is the other Mark Wallinger piece, which is the fourth plinth. And this is what he did. Ecce Homo. Now, anybody have a religious upbringing? Yeah, Ecce Homo is what Pontius Pilate says. Apparently, when he has Jesus, you know, here's Jesus, Ecce Homo, shall I have him crucified or not, or something like that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, Bill Woodrow. Just very briefly on Bill Woodrow. One of his pieces, a book, Enchained, so obviously some sort of reflection on knowledge and liberty. And this is also Bill Woodrow. Can you see that the violin has been made from a washing machine? Yeah. So, conceptual art. Slightly more difficult, this is an older artist, but slightly more difficult, Anthony Caro, but very successful. He works with metal pieces and produces things which are not very pretty, but some people like them. I'm not a great fan of Anthony Caro, but you can find a lot of his work around. Even in France, you find some of it. Quite monumental, always made out of. And moving right on, as you can see, it's unfortunate but true that most of them are men. It's quite difficult to establish yourself as a woman artist. There are some, but it can be quite difficult. Born in 1950, Anthony Gormley. Now, he is best known for this piece, which is The Angel of the North, which is a monumental sculpture up in the northeast of England. And you can see that, in a way, they're trying to imitate Rio de Janeiro or have some sort of symbol. Because one of the problems they had, we had in the north of England, is that, you know, when people think of Britain, well, they think of Big Ben. That's a symbol. What are the symbols of being Stonehenge, maybe? But the north of England, there's really nothing at all. And so this was one of the attempts, the angel of the north, to get over that. So. And of course, in Paris, you have the Eiffel Tower. Although one of the things that confuses me about Paris is that there isn't a clock. I mean, there isn't a central clock, like there is in Madrid or London or New York. There's no clock. It's terrible. Also the same gentleman, Anthony Gormley. And I'm going to finish today with just a short discussion of the Turner Prize. So the Turner Prize is then the big prize for contemporary art every year. It has been won recently by a number of different pieces, but the winner in 2010 was a woman, Susan Phillips, and she her production was to sing a traditional sailor's song in Glasgow in three different places. Okay. That's what she did. There was a historical link between Glasgow and this song and the three places she sung it. Yeah. So we're very obvious. You can't buy it. Yeah. Now, sometimes artists do this deliberately. They don't want... Some artists are fed up with £20 million for a piece of art. It's ridiculous. Art shouldn't be about money. So this sound... This was a sound installation. So she wanted to underline the importance of live music in generating a sense of community in Glasgow. The three Clyde bridges, the three bridges in Glasgow where she sang, were built during the late 19th and early 20th century, when Glasgow was the workshop of the world and the fourth largest city in Europe after London, Paris and Berlin. Yeah, so it's a symbolic singing of a symbolic song in symbolic places, okay? But like I say, you can't buy it. In 2011, it was won by a sculpture. This one, Do Words Have Voices, by Martin Boyce. I don't have the most recent one. And in 2012... I don't have the last two. In 2012, it was won by a video, which was in fact a video of the... what was it a video of? It was a video of something. A 20-minute video installation, The Woolworths Choir of 1979. I can't remember the exact story, in fact, but it's some symbolic historical event that she is reproducing. Well, thank you very much for your attention. That's all for this week, but there is more. There is more next week photography and street art.